This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
We're talking with Bob Motta right now about the case in Delphi. Richard Allen, of course, spending the rest of his life in prison right now, but the appeals process underway. The appeals process does not go fast. It does not go quickly, and it's not super efficient in any way, shape, or form. But we're breaking all of that down right now. And if you have comments or questions, be sure to drop them in the comments section. Let's go way back a little bit because there...
Wait, before you do that, Stacey, yes. Did you say the thing that you wanted to say? I talk so much that I tend to forget whether or not you actually asked your question.
I asked one of them. There was another one I wanted to throw out there from our comment section. People have just been on fire with this. Somebody had asked, Karen asked, is there a time limit for the post-conviction?
No, there isn't. Okay. No, there isn't. There is, you know, I mean, time is your enemy in the sense of like what I was talking about earlier. I mean, people pass away, people forget shit, you know, minds change, memories fail, like all that kind of stuff. So in the sense that the sooner the better that you can get to it because, you know, you, like your memory is always freshest right when something happens. Like I've been listening to some of these memory experts and And frankly, the guy who testified on Richard Allen's behalf at trial was really interesting. And when he said this, it made complete sense that when you are trying to remember something that is already a memory of something that has happened, you are literally having a memory of the first memory.
Correct.
So things, and it's always evolving. So anything that you may have added to memories of that event ago will now be built upon. And that thing that maybe may or may not have even happened has now become a part of your actual memory of what happened, even though it didn't occur. And as you continue to recall, because we all have those stories, right, in our lives, like I always say the best stories are horrible things that happen to us. They always say, you know, like somebody will say, oh my God, like you won't believe what happened. And I'll say, well, you know, here's the bright thing. You'll always have that incredible story to tell people.
Sure.
It's a horrifying thing. I mean, rarely do you have amazing things that happen to you that are a great story. It's usually something terrible. So point being is that, you know, memories, they're a tough thing, you know? It's like, how much can you really trust them? Because you don't know how much your own mind has added over the course of time to those previous memories because that's what you're recalling. The last thing that you talked about the memory, you know?
I mean, that is how it works. I mean, that there are false memories. It's a fact of life of how brains work. And it is, I'll say this, it is interesting how in some cases, this is a totally acceptable fact. And then others, it's like false memories. You don't have false memories. Like, you know, Karen Reed case.
He went to Dever, Cleaver.
Yeah. Whatever that was. But
whatever her name was.
Whatever that was. And I don't know what to think of that, honest to God.
Yeah.
But it exists. It's not something that is made up by an attorney or this or that, you know, for convenience.
It's not a court move. No.
It is there. It is a thing. Whether you want to believe this person is operating on a false memory is a whole other
It's the same thing as false confessions. Like people just refuse to believe that those are actually a fucking thing.
We have
thing.
That in this case, don't we?
We do. We do indeed. We do indeed. I mean, we have them like all over the place. Like
they're
if you watched, I mean, to me, like the most recent example that was a beautiful example of false confessions is that yogurt shop murder case where you had two guys who had absolutely nothing to do with it, who were just a couple of fucking teenagers that used to hang out in this fucking creek behind this small, smoking weed and fucking skateboarding and just being burnout teenager. Right.
Yeah.
You know, they get them in there and both of these guys confess and they rat one another out to something that neither of them did. They both get convicted. One of them gets sentenced to death. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now they both got overturned around 2009. Yeah. Both of them did fucking 8 years in.
Yeah.
And then last week, all of a sudden, with the magic and the wonder of DNA and IgG, they find out and figure out based on the actual DNA that was left on one of the victims and on a shell casing in a fucking drain who actually did it. And it was a fucking serial killer that just happened to bounce into town, walk in there and did what he did. And it's like,
and that's, like,
for the people that just refused, because here's what the problem is.
Goes against
their
narrative.
The problem is with false confessions is that we all sit there in our own minds and are like, I would never, never confess to something.
Bullshit.
I would never say I murdered somebody if they're fucking telling me I did and I didn't do it. I would never do it. And then I'm like, yes, you would.
Yeah, you would.
They're like, yes, you would. That's how this whole thing works.
Yep.
And that was such a great example of it. And it was really fulfilling to have them figure out who had actually committed those heinous crimes against those beautiful kids. So
let's speaking of memories, obviously, you know, there's the false memory. There's this memories being tainted over time. But what about, you know, wait till this case gets to the point where Richard Allen himself is a memory. What do we know? Obviously, he did not do well in prison. You know, he's in prison now. What do we know about his current state in Oklahoma?
Nothing.
But
he's not like people can't even find him. There's people in the Free Richard Allen camp that are searching for him actively in terms, because you can go in any prison. You can go online, you can find out what their inmate number, and you can figure that out a certain way. You can backdoor it by typing in their name. No one can find exactly where he is.
But how is this possible? How is this possible in this system that this is going on, that people cannot find this man get a conditional update on him?
I think Kathy knows where he is, but the process of getting into the prison is a 6 to 8 week vetting process. Kathy has not seen her husband since he was convicted.
Mm-hmm. Holy crap.
I mean, I just want that to kind of like, no matter which side you fall on this, in terms of the way that they closed him off from that woman that was so fucking critical for his ability to stand upright as a human being, because he was that dependent on her. He had this dependency disorder that he just never thought he was good enough. He just never thought that people liked him. He just never thought that he was good enough for people to love him. And that was a real thing. And it way predated any of these crimes, as did his depression. So that's the fragile eggshell that you're dealing with coming into that incarceration thing. And whether they knew it or they didn't know it, and I'm talking about the state and all those players that put
him
in.
They didn't care. You think they give a damn about emotions or mental health?
They didn't give a fuck, man. But like, they didn't realize when they were doing what they were doing just how easy it was going to be to crack him. You know, so, because when they shut him off from any, like, and I don't give a shit that he could be on a tablet calling his wife, not being able to lay eyes on her and have her be in front of him, whether it's behind plexiglass or not, and have her, because I'm assuming, because he wasn't a convicted felon, that she would have been able to sit with him in a room without a piece of glass in front of him, because the guy is a pretrial detainee, not a convicted fucking felon. You can't have him in prison under the same rules that you have for the convicted felon. Like, every time I would hear them say, oh, well, you know, we made more accommodations for Richard. Well, you're supposed to. He's a fucking pretrial detainee.
Yeah.
He's sitting in there, an innocent man, you jag off. The rest of those people in that prison are all convicted murderers and rapists.
Yep.
And this guy is not that. You're treating him as though he is. You know, it's like that, the whole incarceration side of that. Oh, yeah. Anyone that looks at that objectively and is like, you know, I'm good with it, they can fuck right off. Like, yeah. This is not how we can run shit in this country. It's like you said, T, it's a slippery slope, bro. You know, if you say it's okay here, then what's to stop?
And I think we have a weird way of doing things because we have laws in this country and then we have rules within a system. And it seems the two seem to turn into a gray area of what actually one has rights to do. And you know, laws tend to overstep rules. But when it comes to something like this, why were there no, or are there, did the system work as directed, I guess is the question. Were the laws followed? Was everything that was done to him, putting him in solitary confinement, basically torturing him for all of those years, or for that year, a little bit more than a year, was that all completely legal? Was that following the letter of the law as the way the law works?
No, it violated. Okay. It violated. If you look at it, world rules in terms of.
I'm talking Geneva Convention. I'm just talking like how our system.
Yeah, but
law versus world. And I agree there. I think it's insane no matter what. But I'm wondering. When we complain about like, well, this is crazy. It shouldn't be this way. Of course, nothing should be the way anything is. But did it work within what's allowed to happen based on the law?
No. Okay.
Then why?
30 when there's the limit.
Then when there's this. I mean, it's in the open. It's not like any of this was secretive. It's all out there. It's all documented what was done. Why can there be no then if that's the laws were broken? Then there should be repercussions for those people who broke those laws.
But there has to be some sort of standard and somebody as a gatekeeper. And it just doesn't, at least in this case, it doesn't feel like there is.
And if you can't prosecute it, then it wasn't a law that was broken.
So here's the workaround for it. So okay. there's what the standard is in terms of how long you're allowed by law to keep somebody in solitary. They didn't consider So the wording that the government would use is that he wasn't in solitary. He was in a single person cell.
They just renamed it.
I know.
Yeah, right. What's the difference?
But here's the thing. And then the other part of it, T, is that he was under a safe keeping order. So that's why the defense kept going in and saying, okay, enough with the fucking safe keeping order, because that's what they were using. The safe keeping order was the thing that was preempting what is humane, because they were claiming that if they didn't keep him in this isolated area, that either he was going to kill himself and or one of the other inmates was going to kill him. So that was their reasoning behind it. So that was why the defense went in on multiple occasions. That's when they were trying to get rid of the safekeeping order. That's what they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, okay, we've got Cass County here. It's a brand new facility. It can definitely handle Richard Allen. They could keep him in, you know, in a segregated area, and he's not going to be in the most secure area and the most secure prison in Indiana being screamed at by, you know, he's a child killer by fucking, you know,
Odinist guards.
Odinist guards. So, you know, and Gull just kept rejecting it until she didn't on the eve of trial. Like when they finally transported him to Cass County for trial, she's like, oh, yeah, I'll get rid of the safekeeping order now. We'll just keep him at Cass through
just
trial.
That'll names.
Be so much easier.
I tell you what, I got some asbestos to sell her. I just changed the E to the B to a D. Asbestos. Nice. It's lovely. It's a great product. Totally safe. The name slightly changed.
Hey, I started messing with that last night.
Those of you who don't know what they're talking about.
We Sora, the AI, I created a commercial for asbestos. but seriously.
What is it? Bill's Warehouse.
Oh, Bill's House of Deals also sells asbestos. Yes.
Yeah,
but it's seriously, I mean, if that's how this can work, we're just going to call it something different. It's exactly the same to basically check the box and say that we're doing it right, which is basically that's their workaround.
That was the workaround. It was that simple, that safe. But here's where the problem for them with that safekeeping order is, because you can, like in this case, you can follow it, you know, from the breadcrumb trail. Like when they got him on the safekeeping hearing, it happened without Richard Allen being present in court and without him having a representative on his behalf in court. It happened basically under cover of darkness. So Richard Allen, because Richard, and the problem being that Richard Allen had the ability to, pursuant to the safekeeping statute, say, hey, look, here's the deal, man. I understand what you're saying. I understand your concern for me. However, I'm good with it. So just put me where you're going to put me. Like, he had the right to say that. The fact that he, because if this would have been like a strictly ministerial type thing when, you know, they're just saying, okay, well, there's nothing that the defendant could have said or done that would have changed what happened there. Mm-hmm. Then it's not as much of an issue as it is where there is something that he could have said and done during that hearing that would have changed the end result, because that safekeeping hearing and then the resultant order that was entered started everything for them. Yeah. You know, I mean, and it went down the road and, you know, and it ended up where it ended up.
So does Kathy have communication? Like, can she visit him if she wanted to? I mean, I know, like, there's visitation and stuff sometimes in prisons.
That's what I'm saying.
What is, like, what are her rights? Like, what if she wanted to, can she
be approved?
Still.
As we sit here right now, she's still, because remember, they moved him.
How long does that take to get approved?
She told me 6 to 8 weeks. And I'm like, well.
So then start the process.
Aren't we past that by now?
She's up and started the process.
Jesus.
This isn't Kathy sitting around not trying to see Rick Allen. This is her trying to see him when they first got him incarcerated. And then they move him. You get a new facility, new DOC. You got to start the whole thing all over again. It's like, I wouldn't be surprised, frankly, they move him fucking again. I cannot put it past anybody at this point. And yes, I am from Chicago. Insane. Jagoff is definitely a...
Yeah.
I think it's a Midwestern thing. Did you ever say Jagoff coming from Wisconsin?
Yeah, in high school.
I think it's a Midwestern thing. And Gabagool. The Gabagool. Hey,
I learned that on Sopranos. I said fuck Jack a lot. Todd says fuck Jack a lot, too. I learned fuck Jack from Todd.
It's quality.
I say fuck nut.
Yum. Fuck nut's good, too.
Yum.
Fuck nut's good, too.
It's exasperating hearing this.
It really, it's scary. You know, it's exasperating and it's scary to think. You because, know, because, man, we just, like, if we have fair trials, like, we're not sitting here doing this shit.
Let me ask you this, because obviously, you know, to go to trial, you have to be, you know, competent enough to participate in your own defense. What about his competence? I mean, again, I'm not saying anything crazy here, but let's just say that, you know, a little bit down the road here, I mean, he has, can his attorneys get in touch with him?
I mean, yes. I've heard that appellate counsel was able to see him recently in Oklahoma.
So if he's of sound mind, okay, but what about when he's not? What about, you know, if when that happens?
And how do you know?
Or if that happens?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. People have this misconception about mental illness and psychopathy and psychosis and paranoia.
But it's not glaring like it was before where he's eating poop.
Right. He's not sitting there eating his shit. But what I'm saying is that you could be sitting right across from somebody that is diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic who is medicated and you would not ever know.
Sure.
Because they're acting completely normal. They're not having the paranoid, you know, thoughts and, you know, delusions of grandeur and all the shit that comes along with it. Like, people have this thing in their head based on the fucking movies they've watched throughout their life, thinking that everybody that's got mental illness has to be frothing at the mouth and acting like, oh,
But what do you do when he's so broken down? I'm just theoretically saying, what if he's back to the way he was while incarcerated the first time and he's going around saying he did it? You know, I mean, how do you continue appeal on that? How do you continue to defend that if he's not even mentally there to participate and he's convinced he did it, even though he didn't? But that's the state of being to which he is. Do you keep I mean, what do you do? I mean, they basically broke it down so much, it's hard to walk that back, even though the person is damaged because of the system, not because of any sort of crime they committed.
Yeah, I mean, I know, man. It's like, my whole thing with this is that the people that are like, oh, you know what? He confessed 25 times. I'm like, okay, well, I listened to him. And him saying I did it, and then in the next scene saying, well, you know, when Kathy's saying, no, you didn't, you're they're fucking with you. And, mm-hmm. and you know, and he's saying, well, maybe I did, you know, or evidently I did. Like, mm-hmm. that is not a fucking confession.
No.
Like,
no.
If anybody feels comfortable in this chat with having that serve as a confession, if it was on you, then I don't know what to tell you.
No, but everybody likes to go, it won't happen to me. It couldn't be me.
Like if I'm not exactly sure what's going on, if I'm kind of slipping in and out of reality because of the confinements of my condition or the conditions of my confinement, which is going to happen to you. You're going to lose the concept of night and day. You're going to have sleep deprivation, like all the things that are happening to you that are going to be the way they're going to affect the way that your mind works, man. It's just like here's where I'm at with it. Wouldn't it have been much nicer to just had him in holding in you know, like say Cass County. And then if Richard Allen starts saying things like, you know what, I did this to the girls, or if he wrote the warden or the keeper of the jail in Cass County, hey, you know what? I really just want to be able to apologize to families. And you know, and he's been kept under normal circumstances. And then you're not doubting the veracity
no.
or the credibility mm-hmm. of those confessions. What they did to him made it impossible for me to give those things any weight.
Yep.
Sure.
You know, and that's where I'm at with it.
I got a question for you, because you and Allie on an episode not long ago on Defense Diaries, you were talking about the exclusion of the 3:12 a.m. jail call where Allen allegedly lucidly professed his innocence. So if we have the ones where he's, you know, they're throwing in the ones where he's saying he's guilty, but we're not including the ones where he's professing his innocence. Tell me about that, because that was new to me when I started hearing about that.
Yeah. Yeah, so like that particular circumstance with Allen, and it was so at trial, you know, which is when we're all first hearing about, you know, the details of these confessions.
Mm-hmm.
And Brad Rosie, who was again one of Allen's attorneys, before the morning session is going to start, because what we're going to be hearing in open court is finally the recordings of these confessions, these phone mm-hmm. calls between Richard Allen and his wife and Richard Allen and his mother, and then Richard Allen and his conversation with his stepfather, Ken.
Yeah.
So the way that it goes down, and the first thing that happens that morning is Brad Rosie comes in and says, okay, well, I've been made to understand that the state is planning on playing two phone calls from April. I believe the date's April 3rd. And we are asking the court that they play the call that preceded it, because they're all part of this under the completeness doctrine, mm-hmm. that they're all part of basically a continuing phone call, because okay. the way it went down is, which of course Gull rejected and Gull said, you know what, you know how you can get that in, Mr. Rosie, you can have your client get up on the stand and testify, and then I'll allow it in. So she basically was trying to strong arm them into having Richard Allen go up on the stand, despite not really knowing what his mental state is, in having your client testify in open court. Pretty scary proposition. But so ultimately, we end up, Brad reads the transcript in court. So that, and then obviously that was entered into the record as evidence. So, you know, when the evidence was recently released, we got the transcript of mm-hmm. it. And it's essentially Rick calling at 3:30 in the morning or 3:15 in the morning. And he says, hey, you know, hey, mom, I need to talk to dad. And the whole conversation was mind blowing. I was seeing if I could just pull it up. It's like,
Is the audio released or is it just the documentation?
No, there is no, I have not gotten the audio for it. I would love to have the audio. I'd love to have all the audio, you know, because like, here's the thing that people just are not, well, before. So essentially he tells his father, who's his stepdad. He's like, Dad, I just wanted to tell you, you know, how much I love you. And, you know, I wanted you to know that, you know, you, like, I've always felt how much you always had my back, you know, because like Ken really raised Rick and, and you know, and Rick had had an episode a couple of years before these things went down where Rick was suicidal. As I said, you know, there was a thing at the house, you know, where he was threatening to kill himself. And you know, and again, this predates the homicides, right? Yeah, when he thought that was as a result of him doing, you know, had nothing to do with it. Again, it had to do with his mental illness that he's had since he was a teenager with the, you know, major depressive disorder and shit like that. So at any rate, he's like, you know, I drew away from you like after that episode because like you're not really, like you don't really get into the emotions. Like that's not your thing, you know? So I didn't want to put that shit on you. I didn't want to like make it so that you were going to have conversations with me about that. So he's getting into that. And then, you know, and he says there, he's like, there, you know, he's like, but I feel like I don't know how much longer I'm going to be lucid. I don't know how much longer I'm going to maintain my sanity. I can feel it. You know, he's like, they're not like, I don't think they're torturing me physically, but they're psychologically torturing me. And he's saying all this shit. He's like, this is like, I feel like I'm in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. You know, like that's where, like, that's what he said. So he's like, that's where I feel like I am. And that's so I've gotten to the point where I can't talk to Mom and Kathy anymore because it's just, it hurts me so much to hear how much it's hurting them, you know, and I don't want to keep doing that to them. So I think it's better if I don't continue to communicate with them because I don't know what I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. Like, and he's saying all this shit, man. This is at 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
Okay. And then he goes on to say, you know, I think that they're trying to extort money from y'all. So he's like, you know, it's like, I don't want you to put money on my card. He's like, I have coffee. Like I'm okay. I'm, you know, and I'm good as long as I just have the coffee. He's like, I don't want them. I'm afraid that they're going to be trying to extort money from you. I don't want Kathy and you guys to be like putting any money towards a lawyer because like I feel like they're just extorting our money and it's not going to do anything. And like ultimately, you know, he's like, I think that they really think that I did this and I don't know why. He's like, I honestly, I don't know why they're trying to pin this on me. The only thing that I can think of, and he said this shit, which blew my mind, which I now know, and I don't know if Brad or Andy thought of this independently, but he's like, I just know that there was an election for sheriff right after the Iraq.
Ooh.
You know, and like he adds that in there, like during this call. And so.
And they needed to find the boogeyman because the other boogeyman died.
Yeah. So like ultimately they end up ending that call. And then at 8:30. Same morning, still like he calls Kathy and then he's like, and he sounds like, I can't tell you if he sounds different because I haven't heard what he sounds like in that. But, you know, again, he's not like he can make words, which I think people mistake for him being lucid. The fact that he can make words, when you look at what he was saying 5 hours earlier, now he's getting on a phone with Kathy, he's like, I just called to say I'm sorry. She's like, for what, hon? He's like, I did it. She's like, what?
She's like, I remember that one.
Right. So that we've all heard that one.
It was heartbreaking.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and then he's like, well, evidently I did it. You know, they're saying that I did. So like, and then there's a third phone call and she's asking, he's asking Kathy, which is where the argument was that they were really a continuing call or that you needed the context of that 3:30 call. He's like, did I call my dad?
Yeah.
Did I call my dad today?
He didn't remember.
Like, yes, hon. Yeah. I think you did. And he's like, what did I say to him? Like, I couldn't tell if that was Richard Allen trying to, that he has somebody standing outside the cell, that he's saying I did it, and he's trying to code Kathy back to, I want you to ask my dad what I said during that conversation at 3:15 in the morning. You know what I mean? I don't know if that, like, who knows, man? It's like, if the whole thing is insane.
There obviously is some sort of cover up going on here, or avoiding of anybody being responsible for what the hell is going on here. And I don't know if that's because there's someone's covering for who the real killer is. I don't know if they even know who the real killer is, honest to God. I certainly have my suspicions. I know you do, too. And I think he's dead. But, it could as very well be yogurt shop-ish, too, where a transient comes into town and does that. That could be a very real possibility. But
yeah, I think Critter Mama, and I don't know if it was Stacey or Todd who threw that comment up, and they're like, there's nothing crazy about that. Because Critter Mama said, like, yo, well, here comes my crazy coming out. It's like, I don't necessarily think it's any of these people.
But
it absolutely could be a fucking random who just happened upon a state park trail or, you know what I mean?
But
like,
I'm trying to figure out the insane amount of motivation that, I mean, it's a system, but it's a system run by people. And what those people behind the system that are using the levers and the rules of the system to railroad this guy every which way in such obvious fashion with no repercussion and no checks and no balances here going on. What is the goal of this other than is the system trying to protect itself? Because if it were to be exposed or were to be found guilty, and the people who made these poor decisions in this whole process were to have been found of basically ripping human rights away from this man and destroying his life and destroying his family life and the lawsuit and the dollars that would follow that would then be needed to be repaid to these families because of this. Is it all about that at the end? Is this at the end just, you know, Delphi trying to cover their ass because they don't want this to be another making a murderer situation where they have to pay millions of dollars to someone and have a big black eye? But then you go so far, you have so many systems at play here. He's in Oklahoma now. And I mean, so who's pulling the levers? Because it's not even the original people pulling them anymore, but they all seem to have this same, let's go and destroy Richard Allen motive.
Yeah. I mean, look, I agree, because look, it's one of three things. Well, maybe one of four things, right? It's either somehow, some way, they got the right guy and they just had a really shitty case and kind of got lucky and got the conviction and they have the right guy, right? So they're...
Even if he's the right guy, you wouldn't treat him this way.
I know. So you've got that thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Is in the realm of possibilities. You've got the concept that they knowingly understand that he's not the guy and did the most evil thing humanly possible to another human being short of killing them. And you railroad him to convict him for a crime that he didn't commit knowingly. Or the other is that their incompetent investigation left them with very little evidence. And this guy was the best fit. And they were going to go in there and they were going to hammer a square peg into a round hole, which is exactly what they did. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, like, one of those things is the truth, you know, and like, I don't know. I mean, I hope to God it's three. Like, I hope it's not two. I hope that the depths of the evil didn't go to the extent where you got a guy running for sheriff. It's been five fucking years. And they're like, all right, this guy was out there.
Yeah.
We can't exclude his shell. Let's make our run at him. You know, he doesn't not look like the guy in the video. We're not going to do any kind of, calculations. And what do they call that? Telegramat or what is that? Where the grammar, whatever. There's somebody in the chat will know, like, where you can tell what the measurement of that fuck.
Oh yeah, why didn't they do any of the? Yeah, I know you're talking about.
Yeah,
telemetry or something. Yeah, like why?
Mathy for me.
Yeah. Why not do all of the, and sometimes, I mean, and I also wonder too, I mean, cause if it is number two and they're doing it for a nefarious purpose of winning an election, which again, this happens quite often. People will say things, do things to win an election. I'm not saying that's what happened here. I don't know the answer to that question, but I don't think a lot of times people realize the evil as to which they're conducting themselves in the moment and the repercussions of that evil. When you take a step back and you see exactly what that all did, well, where did this happen? How did, like, who made these choices? Mm-hmm. Oh, that looks like a really evil choice. Well, at the time, did you think it was an evil choice? No, I thought I was winning an election. Yeah. Well, it turns out what you did was evil.
Yeah.
if that's what you did. And I don't care whether you did it, you realized it at the time. It is what it is, and you can call it what you want, just like you can call putting someone in solitary confinement and making them eat their own poop after a while, that it's some sort of special consideration or whatever the hell they called it to label it something different. It's still the same damn thing. The consequences are the consequences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
What are the next steps in the never-ending saga here? Of Richard Allen now.
Well, the next thing that's going to happen definitively is that his brief will get filed, and then the state, and I think the attorney general is preparing the appeal on behalf of the state. Their response. So they'll file their response. They'll probably get 30 days. They'll probably ask for an extension. So eventually, both the briefs will get filed, and at some point, the appellate court may allow oral arguments, in which case I'll be in Indiana with bells on for that.
How far down the road is that?
I'm hoping by January or February, I'm hoping everything's filed by January. No. Like December would be nice, but with the holidays, it's just, I don't know if it's
sure. Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, that can throw. Yeah. I get so. Yeah. I'm going to need to go.
That's it, dude. But I mean, look, when the appeals come out, bro, we're going to have a lot to talk about.
We are.
When the briefs are out, it'll be a lot to talk about.
This is a case. Yeah, this is why we keep talking about it, because this needs to continue to be not fall under the cracks. And I appreciate you, obviously, never dropping the ball on this. And
I honestly do. You know, you're one of the few creators that's got a nice sized audience that's still like sticking to his guns and keeping this thing kind of in the public's mind, because there's so much shit going on. You know, there's so many cases. There's so much awful, awful shit going on. It's easy to allow things to slip through the cracks. So I really do appreciate the fact that you continue to stay the course, man.
You as well, Bob. You as well. Such a screwed up story. Let us know your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube, if that's where you're watching us. If not, search Hidden Killers, the Tony Bruschi, and you will find us there. Be sure to press subscribe wherever it is you're listening or watching us as well, so you don't miss any of our coverage on this and the many cases we got for you right here. Until next time, for Bob, for Todd, for Stacy, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
At McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playmcd.com for full details and amoe.playmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.